This meeting is now being recorded.
Good morning. This is our lead staff to the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee. I'm going to take roll call right now. I'll start with the judges, on to the court executive officers, and also then the vice the committee. Judge Conklin?
Present.
Judge Barton?
Here.
Judge Koch?
I'm here.
Judge Earl?
Judge Earl sent me an email saying she'd be a little bit late. Okay, somebody's already put us on hold. Not a great start. There
Judge
we go.
Good. Judge okay, Good?
So yes, I'm here.
Judge Herman?
Here.
Judge Heinrichs?
Here.
Judge Holland? Judge Holland. Judge Kaufman?
Here.
Cool.
I'm sorry, was I calling for Judge Cool? I didn't hear that.
Yes.
Here.
Thank you. Judge Lee? Judge Lee? Judge Maragonda?
Here.
Judge McCabe?
Here.
Judge Saunders?
Here.
Judge Smith?
Here.
Sherry Carter?
Here.
Judge Feldstein?
Here.
Judge Cumming? Cumming? Tammy Grimm?
Here.
Jose Guillen?
Here.
Samuel Hamrick?
Here.
Kevin Harrigan?
Here.
Jeffrey Lewis?
Here.
Michael Planet?
I'm here.
Michael Roddy?
Here.
Good morning. This is Les Holland just dialing in.
Good morning, Judge Holland.
Good morning.
Linda Romero Solis?
Present.
Brian Taylor?
Here.
Tanya Ugren Capo Bianco?
Here.
Christina Volkers? Christina Volkers? David Yamasaki?
I'm here.
Advisory members, Jody Patel? Jody Patel? Mark Dustman? Mark Dustman's not here. Millicent Tidwell? Vlatko Theodorovich?
Here.
That's it, Judge. We have a
call. All right. And did somebody else just call?
Yes, this is Rebecca Fleming.
Great, Rebecca. Thank you very much. We just completed roll with your call-in. So welcome, everybody. I appreciate that we're all doing this by telephonic. We all know the rules. But number one is please don't put us on hold because that obviously lets us all listen to your hold music. But mute is just fine. As a matter of fact, mute is preferable if you're getting other work done or doing other things and chiming in as you feel the need arises. We'll just do a few procedural matters. It's my understanding, Stephen, that you received no public comment for today's meeting?
Yes, that's correct, Judge.
Great. Thank you very much. I hope all of you have had a chance to receive and review the minutes of our last meeting. That's the March 10th, 2016 meeting. Do I have a motion to approve those minutes?
This is Planet. Move approval.
All right. Second?
David Yamasaki.
Moved and seconded. All in favor of approving the meeting minutes of March 10th? Well, let me ask you this quick.
All right.
Any opposed? So what I'm going to do, if there are other action items, is I'm going to take it in the reverse, and I'm simply going to start off with whether or not there's any opposition. So I heard no opposition for the minutes. We'll show the minutes are approved. So that moves us already ahead of schedule to item one, which is Zlatko discussing the May revision that just came out.
Yes, thank you, Judge. Hopefully everyone was able to participate and join in on the calls and got the memo on the May revision. The calls were well attended. We probably had about 200 people, maybe 180 people between the two calls over the course of Monday, and I did get some email questions from folks out there as far as what was in, what wasn't in, and any confusion that we had about the budget. So just to sort of briefly go over it, the message from the governor is that the tide is appearing to turn in terms of revenues, and while there's no cause for alarm, now is the time to ensure that there's no, as the governor put it, no significant ongoing spending and investments being made in the budget. And interesting that they chose to compare the ant and the grasshopper Aesop fable about saving in the summer for the winter versus just going about their business and enjoying the fruits as they are now. So with that, you know, we were pleased, and I think I had some of this commentary on Friday for the Revenue and Expenditure Subcommittee, some of the highlights, and I would include the highlights of the May revision, are that the B3 BCP was approved in the May revision, and that's good. That obviously has an impact on the IMF and the next issues that will be discussed, and signals from the way in which the discussion happened with the administration, I think an openness and willingness to look at our case management needs going forward, which would then hopefully be positive for our sustain and the courts and then any other courts that have shortfalls in case management systems. Because when we presented the issues to the Department of Finance, they actually were more interested in funding it when it was viewed as part of an overall longer-term plan and part of our overall strategic plan on technology. They actually became a bit more excited about the overall issue, and questions became more about our overall plan and how we head towards 58 modern case management systems and how we could look to the future of tying those in for statewide data that the Department of Finance has been looking to get for some time now. I mentioned on the call on Monday regarding the TRACOR Trust Fund revenues, and to our disappointment, there was no civil assessment funding made. This has been an issue that we've talked about for some time, and all of you are aware of the implementation of amnesty and what it's meant in terms of revenues. And I know it's not consistent depending on how amnesty is being participated in county by county, but overall we're talking tens of millions of dollars of lost civil assessment revenues, which we know have direct impacts on your operations. And the unfortunate thing is that there's no message about that not being included in the May revision, but rather it has to be based on their communication to us about their position on what they see as described as local revenues. The existing policy on backfill is related to base allocations and those shared revenues, whereas they've taken the position that these are local revenues and are dollar-for-dollar returns and not part of their policy to backfill. We did acknowledge to them that, yeah, we understand that to some extent. However, they changed the landscape with amnesty, and therefore this was not something that was just sort of the normal ebb and flow of local revenues, but rather a massive change in the expectations with very little time to plan and with no fund balances, no ability to really sort of manage these in the short term, causing operational impacts on trial courts. And so while the policy is simple, from their perspective, it definitely is complicating our operations. And that was an issue yesterday when the Senate had their budget hearing that we made a point of bringing up to them about their support for the $20 million increase that the governor proposed and our desire to have more than that. But that don't expect much, if anything, to come of the $20 million when we have eroding revenues on the other side. And the sub-chair, Senator Hancock, acknowledged that in her reactions to my testimony. So we are letting folks know that absent this, there will be operational impacts, and don't think that somehow adding monies in other areas will have the impact that they were hoping it would. Some technical adjustments on trial court benefits, which, again, just continues the administration's funding of those base costs. So we're not heading in the wrong direction there. I know Martin had talked about compensation issues at the state level. I don't know how much folks want to go in there. They can ask questions about that if they'd like. He brought up the issue of the reallocation of vacant judgeships, which was something that the administration had proposed to do five. Their updated proposal is to only do four, take two from Santa Clara and two from Alameda, and move them to Riverside and San Bernardino with no funding adjustments. The only thing that was included in the budget related to judgeship reallocation would be funding for sheriff security, as they see that as a change in the level of service at the local level and would need to be funded outside of the realignment pot. The budget, there were no changes from the budget otherwise as it relates to the administration's proposal. All of the amounts that were included in the governor's budget for language access and the Phoenix, the IMF backfill, the $20 million for trial court operations. Proposition 47, no change to either the costs or the savings estimate, $1.7 million and the $21.4 million for cost. Same support for the emergency funding, $10 million, the court innovations program, deferred maintenance funding. And so those are all good things and show the administration's continued support, albeit we'd prefer to have obviously had not only the civil assessments addressed, we would have liked to have seen additional discretionary funding, which we pressed the administration on, additional dependency council funding, pressing them on fund balances and the 1% reserve. But notwithstanding those lack of inclusion of some of those changes, and the civil assessments, we're pleased, given the revenue decline that was projected in the May revision, that there weren't any other major changes. But I do want to give you sort of a more live update on what's going on in the legislature as it relates to the proposals. So I'll kind of go through a quick list. And by and large, the legislature is approving the governor's budget as proposed. So I'll just go those again quickly. So both sides have adopted the 8.7 for Phoenix, and they've approved the language access. The discussion on language access has been more so about any budget bill language and some requests to limit the use of the additional $7 million to live interpreting. So that's still an issue, but the dollars are still in. For that, there was a small amount for court non-sheriffs provided security, which was has been approved. Our information systems enhancements, the security issue has been approved on both sides. Prop 47 was approved in the Senate yesterday with a minor change, but I think while it feels minor, it is concerning to us. They approved the $21.4 million that was proposed in the budget. But then they offset it by the $1.7 million that was estimated in the governor's budget. But if you recall, the explanation that we've provided is that the Department of Finance identified those savings but did not score those against the branch's budget. Our concern is that the legislature in the Senate has scored that $1.7 against the costs. We were concerned that going forward that they may think that it is appropriate to then score any future adjusted savings against the branch's budget, and we have argued in committee and we've argued to the LAO and to the staff members that the trial courts are not fully funded at this time, and therefore to make any reductions as it relates to any savings related to Prop 47 are premature. And so while it seems like a minor issue there, I think it's a significant nuance for us in so much as what it means going forward for them potentially arguing to score savings against trial court budgets, which are underfunded.
Ms. Lockho, this is Sherry. May I stop you there on the Prop 47 to just give you some talking points that may help?
Sure.
So on
also,
the Prop
47. Not to interrupt, but Sherry, we're also going to go into this with Judge Kuhl presents on Prop 47, so just so you know, we're covering it there too. But go ahead.
Oh, well, I can wait. My point is when you talk with the Department of Finance and others and the legislature and others, keep in mind that WAFM is for the staff piece of the funding. And for Prop 47, we don't know if there's been a staff reduction
Right.
And processing the misdemeanors. I don't think there's a clear understanding of WAFM, and that is just to fund staff. The other piece that we found in L.A. is that there are components related to Prop 47 that have not been measured that are important to the legislators. For example, when you reduce a felony to a misdemeanor, now you can get your case expunged. So we're seeing an increase in some work that really hasn't been measured. So I would suggest you let them know that.
No, as Shelley has been a current in Office of Criminal Justice Programs, has been, and Francine have been talking to folks, including your bench, and getting the sort of live on the ground impacts. And we've put together that exact type of information about the operational impacts, and we've argued. And Department of Finance is not in promoting preparing to score it. That was good that they acknowledge that they're not taking any dollars. It's been the legislative analyst who has said that there are savings and they want to score them. But we put together some a little interim report that I believe was provided to. It was discussed at the PJ Executive Committee maybe a month or so ago, and it was based on discussions from there about really are there savings and the complexity of the misdemeanors that are now going down and whatever's left of the felonies and how they're not what they used to be, and so there's just a change in behavior. And so even though we don't necessarily gather all the metrics, but as we're doing the best we can with it, we're definitely showing them at least the anecdotal information like you are describing, Sherry.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so we had at the Senate, the first hearing, Shelley was providing all of that kind of feedback that she's gotten from your bench and Judge Danielson, as an example, down in San Diego, just spending a lot of time on the phone with them and visiting as well to see the real change, which is unknown. And that's been our argument to the LAO is, you don't know, and we don't know, and we want to do the least harm to the branch, given that we're in the middle of doing this. And for whatever reason, the Senate chose to score the 1.7, thankfully a small amount, but again, I'm concerned going forward whether that, in their minds, believes that there's been a policy call to actually score savings in the future. So we're fighting that one on an ongoing basis. I appreciate the question, Sherry. That's definitely part of our presentations. The $20 million for trial court operations was approved in the Senate yesterday. Court innovations, so it's open. It's not been decided on the Assembly. We think that the Assembly will be hearing all the May revision and any remaining budget items either Monday or Tuesday. So thus far, they have not acted on the Prop 47. The Senate has approved the $20 million, whereas the Assembly has left it open. The Court Innovations Grant Program was denied yesterday by the Assembly or by the Senate. It is still open in the Assembly. The state level $10 million has been approved on both sides, so that's very good news. The vacant judgeships was approved in the Senate. We're not hearing that the Assembly may be open to that. The sub-chair is from Santa Clara, San Jose, and may not be interested in seeing any changes in the judgeship allocations there. Peremptory challenges is likely not to be approved in either house at this time based on what we've heard from folks. A number of the other sort of baseline adjustments like the retiree health and benefit adjustments for trial courts, the trial court trust fund balances, revenue shortfall, have all been approved at this juncture. What came up yesterday in the Senate, though, was important for y'all to be aware of, is that the Senate adopted a $29 million increase in dependency council funding. $22 million of that would be part of our ongoing funding of the funding gap, and then $7 million would be directed to used to hold those counties with that would have been lowered to hold those harmless, so effectively anybody who would be losing would be maintained. So there's an important issue there as far as legislative support for council funding.
Zachary, this is Glenda Saunders. Would you mind just giving me those numbers again?
$22 million for the overall dependency council, and then $7 million for holding harmless courts that would have been losing otherwise.
Yeah. So I just so you know, Zlatko, that is going to create some additional equity issues.
Indeed.
Under the reallocation that the Judicial Council approved, because it while it may hold some harmless from that reallocation, it will not move in the direction of having everyone equitably treated the same with that funding based on workload. So, you know, I just want to point that out, that it is not what the branch approved.
No, I understood. No, we understand that. And then, and obviously the advocates at the local level have been working the legislative staff, and the sensitivity when you think about the two Democratic members on the committee from Alameda and Santa Clara, you know, the advocates who are concerned about any revenue loss or any funding loss have, you know, members on the committee that are would definitely be hearing their local needs. And so those are different than what it is that the council adopted. So we clearly aware of that. The case management system has been approved in the Senate, the V3, so that's good. So not only was it approved by in the May revision, but it's been approved in the Senate. The Assembly heard it on Monday and will likely approve it when they come back to work on Monday or Tuesday. So as far as any dollar changes, that's what's been done so far. The legislature has also acted to extend or eliminate the sunset on the Sergeant Shriver funds, and that small fee increase that was slated to expire at the end of next budget year. But the concern both from our side and from the operators of the programs that you need time to know whether or not your funding will continue, and so they were able to get the legislature to eliminate the sunset on the Senate side, and I believe provide a 3-year extension on the Assembly side. So we're making progress. We will definitely be continuing to raise alarms regarding the lack of civil assessment funding. We will continue to advocate for more discretionary funding. I think as Martin just said on Monday, our modest return to the 5% plan that was the last 2 years of the budget, we think are still reasonable, and give, notwithstanding the revenue softness, we think that those are some critical needs for us. Judgeships continue to be an issue, and we've gotten some word from some LED staff about there being the sensitivity to getting more judgeships. Really just pushing on the 1%. We know there's the Obernolte bill regarding eliminating the going back to the prior statute on the 1%. So there's a number of things, I think, is a SB 1028 or 1023, I apologize, with one of those two is the committee bill to fund the 12 additional judgeships with $5 million. That's not that funding. We'd like to see that come in the form of the budget if possible. Hopefully the governor will see fit to sign that bill if it doesn't find its way through the budget. There's a lot of things going on right now. We don't know what's going on in the Assembly. You know, there's been calls for additional equal access funding. We've heard about court reporter funding. So there's just a lot of things that we're all trying to track down as we're heading through the close down of the legislative budget and then coming into conference committee over the next couple of weeks and then sending a budget to the governor by June 15th, the constitutional deadline, in which they've met consistently over the last handful of years with the passage of Prop 26 and their concerns regarding their pay and getting their work done. So any questions that I can help with at this time?
Zlatko, this is Glenda Saunders again. Has an approved BCP seeking multi-year funding ever not been funded in subsequent years?
In the history of the budget, yes. But
how often has that happened? what is the likelihood?
If the economy makes, if there's an economic catastrophe, then all bets are off. And so I only say that it's not without possibility, but it's unlikely. I mean, this is a 3-year investment by the administration. We would hope that they would include that in their now multi-year budget planning. And so they should, in the grand scheme of the budget, their commitment to this technology enhancement for these four courts, I think, stands the test of any additional softening. And that's why the governor's been steadfast in getting money into the rainy day fund so that they can try and offset any of those reductions. And he says it's still far short from what it is that they've seen in terms of potential softening over the next few years, especially with the Prop 30 revenues going down. But Judge Saunders, I would definitely be, you know, fully expecting it to be in. But I wanted to honestly answer your question. Has there ever? Yes. Is it likely with us? No, it should stay in the budget.
By the way, I want, as one of the V3 courts, I want to thank you and the many others that were involved in pushing for that BCP. I was astounded to see it in the budget. I think we'd all grown pessimistic about it, and I think it's just a great boost to furthering our case management systems throughout the state.
Indeed, thank you, and I appreciate all your support, the courts and the JCTC and everybody who got together to just pull such a wonderful product. I think it was a joint effort. But what I think my message to you is that the fact that this was not just a one-off and it showed a branch strategic concept gave the Department of Finance the confidence that we aren't just one-offing them, that this is just here, just that it shows that we have branch-wide thinking, strategic thinking. We can work towards longer-term goals that show our branch can be, thoughtful in that way, and that we're not just individuals. We have, obviously, individual courts that do their jobs to meet their statutory and constitutional requirements, but providing the kind of forward-thinking structure for our operations to our stakeholders there, it changed when they really started to understand that we have thought about this and that we do have an IT strategic plan. And talking with Judge Buckley and talking with Justice Slough and Judge Conklin about these issues, we really were able to put together that kind of narrative for the Department of Finance. And you see it'll be approved by the legislature. And now we have the challenge of making it happen, which we will.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Take advantage of the philosophy of the BCPs. Go ahead.
Just getting back to the Obernolte bill, what's the clatter in the legislature and potentially DOF on that?
Like sailing through on consent after item.
Wow.
Which is great. And so, I mean, it'll be a matter of if it goes all the way through to the governor, then we, await a signature or a veto message. Because if it doesn't make it to the point where it goes, if it goes, continues on consent, and it doesn't actually go to an Appropriations Committee hearing where the Department of Finance would be asked to take a position on the bill, then we won't know what the administration's take on the bill is until it gets to the governor's desk.
Okay. So any feel from, since that was sort of the governor's idea, any feel for whether he's going to red pencil it or not, whether the DOF is going to jump on it?
They haven't been supportive over the last 4 years to do anything except tweak things on the margin. So, we continue to remind them of the problems that have been created by the 1%. And hopeful, the legislature is hearing it thus far, which is good. We just hope that if it shows the kind of unanimous support as it has through the legislative process, that that's a strong signal to the administration of the legislature's desire to revisit that which they were a party to a few years ago.
Any other questions for Zlatko? We're ready for item two. I think Judge Earl's on the line. Zlatko, I did want to both echo Judge Saunders' thanks for the BCP as well as overall. I know you've been a pretty strong advocate and even testifying about our budget interests from the trial court perspective. even on the Prop 47 stuff. So we do appreciate your continued efforts in that regard on behalf of the trial courts.
Yeah, thanks, Judge.
Judge Earl, you've joined us? I think she had.
Hold on, I'm here. I had to get you off mute.
That's okay.
Sorry about that.
That's good. I think we're ready to move to item two, which is both Judge Earl and Sherry Carter presenting on the R&E subcommittee recommendations. This is an action item. You have the materials that have been emailed to you by Stephen yesterday. And with that, I'll turn it over to you two.
Thank you. So this is an action item that we bring to you most every year at this time. It's a recommendation to make allocations from the trust fund and from the IMF. This year there is some slight reductions, and they're really, I think, insignificant, but we felt, especially with some impending deficits looming in the IMF, that it was important to stay true to not increasing expenditures. This year also includes an recommendation to set aside approximately $2 million in fund balance in the IMF to reserve against possible future declines in revenue. And the allocations recommendations from the IMF include a recommendation to endorse a position taken by the Judicial Council Technology Committee regarding sustained hosting. So with that, I would turn it over to either Sherry or JCC finance staff to walk you through the details.
You know, I would agree with you, Judge Earl. I think the Judicial Council staff will highlight those areas faster than I could do that. So why don't we turn it to Colin and Cottrell if they're on the phone.
Hi, I'm here.
Okay.
It's Cottrell, yeah.
Great. Thanks, you. Go right ahead.
Sure. Were there any particular questions regarding the allocations, or were you looking for a higher-level assessment?
I think just a very high-level outline of what the changes are and what we're recommending.
Oh, okay.
Cottrell, why don't we have Colin cover recommendation number one? We'll go over the recommendations one by one. Those, they can
okay.
be found on combined page number 7.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
So combined page number 7. Well, Colin, do you want to?
Sure. So as it relates to the Trucker Trust Fund, which is recommendation one, we have three. We have one recommendation in three parts. The first relates to the Judicial Council and Trial Court Operations Appropriation. And I should also note that the Trial Court Operations Appropriation in 16-17 will change. It will now be it'll be referred to as the expenditures on behalf of the trial courts. Appropriation. So in the Budget Act, it will no longer be considered part of the Judicial Council or state operations expenditures. It will be considered part of the local assistance and or trial court expenditures. It will be its own appropriation item. So just want to get that out of the way. So the first recommendation is $13.89 million, and I think it's actually supposed to be $13.819 million for Judicial Council and trial court operations. And you'll actually see that on page 11 on column F. That is, unfortunately, I forget what the attachment is, but it's, if you look at combined page 11 on column F, you'll see the recommendations there, and it's split up into the two components that I just referred to. The Judicial Council is on column D, and the trial court operations, which will be changed to expenses on behalf of the trial courts in 16-17, that will be changed and the appropriation will be changed. That you can see in column F. So roughly $3 million is going to be spent related to Judicial Council staff. Roughly half of that is related to Phoenix HR services and finance services that are provided to the trial courts and are reimbursed by the trial courts for those services. For the remaining $10.8 million, most of that relates to the Sergeant Shriver Civil Council Pilot Program, which is funded by revenues that are specifically statutorily restricted for that purpose and that purpose only. The only expenditures on here that are either not specifically statutorily restricted or are not reimbursed by the trial courts are two programs. One is the Children Independence Case Training, which you can see on line one. It's $113,000. And the other is the Revenue and Collections Program, formerly known as the Enhanced Collections Program, which is on line five, and that's $625,000. The rest of these are actually statutorily restricted revenue, so they're basically outside of, I would say really kind of outside of the control of the judicial branch in the sense that these monies must be funded for this purpose, or they have no impact on the trial court trust fund because they're reimbursed by the trial court based on the services they provide to that as requested by the trial court. As it relates to recommendation B, it's $144.1 million, and that you will see on pages 12 and 13, attachment B. And if you see, if you look at column E, you'll see the items, the detail of that $144.1 million. Basically, this relates to reimbursement programs as well as the criminal justice realignment program. And I also should note that the court-appointed counsel funding does not take into account any new funding that may appear in the Budget Act. This is based, this only reflects the current appropriation for court-appointed counsel. So if there are additional funds provided, that action would be taken up by the TIC back in the July meeting. I believe, oh, and I'm sorry, and just last but not least, because the jury reimbursement program, and this is a recommendation that was approved last year as well, but because the jury reimbursement program funding is so close to the expenditure level, the recommendation was made to ensure that all courts are funded equally or equitably, that at the end of the year, an adjustment is made. If the expenditures exceed the available funding, that adjustment is made based on each court's proportion of their of the expenditures to the statewide expenditures, and that they receive the same proportionate amount of the available funding. So those are the three recommendations from the Trial Court Trust Fund. Are there any questions related to that before we move on to the IMF?
Doesn't sound like it. Go ahead.
All right.
Recommendations, I'm sorry, Chris, let me just offset it up for you. So recommendations two through five are related to the IMF. And if you want to look at the table that specifically addresses the 16-17 allocations, that will be found on page 16, combined page 16. So go ahead, Chris.
All right, so page 16 is the proposed allocation for the IMF in 16-17, as Stephen mentioned, is $64.46 million. That actually is slightly revised up by $317,000 for a revision IT provided last week for V3. So V3, that's attachment E, row 23, would actually be increased by $317,000. That's still a net zero effect for the overall allocation for the IMF because the increase there essentially reduces what's available for LANWIN or telecommunications in 16-17 by that same amount.
So that's cool. Related to recommendation number three. JC staff have are recommending two amendments to the action taken by the subcommittee. So the first one was discussed by Patrol, that's related to the V3. So what we are recommending because of the error is to increase the V3 allocation, which is, as Catrell mentioned, on row
23
of attachment D, page 16, but also to reduce the allocation for the telecommunications program. So it's a net zero adjustment. There's also another recommendation we have is related to the elimination of funding for the court interpreters testing allocation of $143,000. So the recommendation was to eliminate the funding in the IMF but shift the cost over to the trial court trust fund court interpreters appropriation. And for pretty much since the inception of that appropriation from the trial court trust fund, there is Budget Act language that specifies how that money can be spent. And although it's changed a little bit over time, it's always pretty much, in terms of you look at the plain language, restricted to reimbursing courts for the cost of either staff or contract interpreters. We also have had a legal opinion from the Legal Services Office, not directly addressed related to the specific cost of court interpreter testing, but for other similar kinds of costs. And the opinion is that that appropriation cannot be used for anything other than coordinators as well as staff and contract interpreters. So we're recommending that you do not actually reduce the funding from the IMF. because we don't believe they can be actually paid out of the trial court trust fund. And again, this would be
No, you mean out of the 4545.
Right.
In other words, yeah. So line 14, the 143 would come back to IMF, and it, the recommendation originally is that it would be paid out of the interpreter fund, and judicial counsel opinion is it cannot. So that 143,000 would come back as an IMF expense.
Right. So it's really the trial court trust fund, the court interpreter appropriation, just a little technical, but that's just so you're
right.
Clear what it is. Also, we're recommending that the telecommunications also be reduced in order, by that amount that's currently being recommended in order to maintain the $2 million fund balance that the subcommittee is recommending.
So the 143 would come out of the telecommunications?
That's right.
Yeah,
that's correct.
As well as the 317,000. Now, the other recommendation I want to make sure that it's clear is, as we all know, projections change. So if any additional funds do loosen up by the end of the year, that money would go back to telecommunications, right?
That is correct. And the net positive effect of that is any additional monies that go to telecommunications reduces the finance charges going forward as well.
Right.
Very good. Any further discussion about those? I mean, we'll keep going on this item, but about those two amendments to the recommendation three? Okay. Then I don't know if you're through with three. Are we ready to go to four?
I had a quick question.
Go ahead.
This is Judge Earl. So, Cottrell, on recommendation number three, does that the dollar amount take into account JCC's recommendation regarding the interpreter testing and the coming out of telecommunication support?
Stephen, could you help me on that one? I'm not sure.
Right. So, Judge Earl, I think your question is, based on our recommended changes, would the number $64.46 million change?
Correct.
No, it would not, because it's a net zero adjustment.
Okay.
Because we would take it out of telecommunications, Judge Earl.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
All right. Thanks, Stephen. All right. As Judge Earl and Sherry Carter mentioned, this is recommendation number four. We are proposing a $2 million fund balance cushion in 16-17. That is a reserve against any potential declines in revenue. But again, as Sherry mentioned earlier, if that's not the case and we have an increase in revenues for 16-17, then those monies would be allocated toward the LANWIN program.
Specifically anything over $2 million?
Correct.
Yeah, just to make sure everybody understands what that means. Okay.
Yes. Now, looks like that's both four and five. I'm not sure who wants to take the lead on number six.
Cottrell, I'll do number six, but can you also go over number two quickly related to the allocation?
Oh, sure. Okay. That's the increase for TIGTAP for the we're basically transferring $200,000 from ROAC to TIGTAP in 15-16. That is as a result of LSO needing additional monies to meet those legal needs in 15-16. I think those were referenced in Brian Taylor's report. I'm not sure if that's attached. Let's see.
The report's not attached, although we provided a link to the reports.
And a brief discussion of recommendation two is outlined on combined page eight.
All right, moving on to recommendation number six, the Judicial Council Technology Committee is making some recommendations to the council and is seeking the endorsement of the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee.
So any discussions on that? Okay, so that covers all the recommendations from the R&E?
Yes.
Okay. Initially, Sherry and Judge Earl, thank you so much for the continuing work you do on this. It's the lion's share, and we really appreciate it. So the recommendation, and this is an action item, the recommendation is that each of recommendations 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 at combined pages 8 and 9 be adopted with the amendments mentioned by Stephen. That is the bottom of page 8, as well as the table noted, the 143 is basically washed out by the 143 that would then be taken out of technology, as well as the related amendment. I think that covers both of them. Any further discussion on the overall recommendation of RNE to adopt each of recommendations 1 through 6 by TICVAC?
Judge Conklin, this is Jose Guillen. Just clarification on number 6. Do we know the cost, projected cost, and whatever that cost is, do we envision that that would be coming out of the IMF fund?
We do know the cost. Are you talking about the Placer hosting? Is that what you're talking about specifically, Jose?
Number 6, whatever is envisioned in number 6.
Yes, and it's identified as part of the discussion write-up, I believe, on page 9.
Be page 9, correct.
And it's $736,000 for the Placer hosting court, but I do want to point out that it would then take down the IMF funding in fiscal year 1920. So this has been reviewed by the JCTC and the Revenue and Expenditure Committee, and it's a recommendation that we fund it because it would allow those courts to now work together and eventually no longer require the funding from the IMF.
So not to overgeneralize, Sherry, but it'll essentially pay for itself. It's a return on investment. We pay
it
for it up front, and it'll pay itself.
Yeah, it'll pay for itself, and, it's the gift that continues to give.
Right. Not only does it pay for itself, but it results after that in savings. So, well done.
Great. Thank you.
Judge,
any further
Judge
discussion?
Conklin? Yes, Judge Conklin. This is Debbie Brown from Legal Services.
Hi.
I did want to note one item from a staff perspective. With number 2, the augmentation for the TICTAP program, although the recommendation is that all of these be presented to the Council at its June 23rd and 24th meeting, we wanted to note a correction here that this would actually need to be presented to the Council by circulating order, which we would hope to get out today or tomorrow if the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee approves this, so that we can continue to fund the outside counsel funded through this program.
Okay, so that's just a timing issue. We'll need to break that out, so to speak, and get it approved right away.
Yes, thank you.
Great. Any opposition? Okay, so with that comment as well, which seems appropriate, any further discussion overall on item 2, the recommendations discussed? So again, for ease, what I'm going to do is ask, considering we're on a phone call rather than take a roll call, is there anybody opposed to item 2, the action item, adopting all 6 recommendations with the noted amendments? Any opposition? Hearing no opposition, then I will also deem that the action is unanimously approved. Any objection to unanimously approving item 2? That's it. Okay. That takes us now, Sherry, you remain at the mic. Takes us to your item 3, the children's waiting room distribution. And again, this is an action item on behalf of LA. Sherry?
Thank you. So the Los Angeles Superior Court has 38 courthouses throughout Los Angeles County. Of those, there are children's waiting room in 9. That number has not changed. There was an error in the initial materials. These 9 have been in place for many, many years. Over the last 4 to 5 years, the costs have exceeded the $3. I think Los Angeles is the only, if not the only, one of the very few that only gets $3 on the initial filing to support the child care waiting rooms. And for the last 4 to 5 years, reserve funding in this restricted account was used. Judicial Council staff has been aware. I also raised it with Kimberly Flinner, who chaired the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee working group that looked at the child care waiting room funding, and there was discussion, as you'll recall, a couple of years ago to have courts return reserve funding. I pointed out to her that Los Angeles had been using it. I'm happy to return it, but then I would have to seek an increase at that time, and the decision was no, continue to use the reserve funding to pay for the contracts until it was exhausted. That will happen in December of next year. So we are seeking an increase from $3 to $4.75 to pay for our 9 child care waiting rooms. It will cover the existing contracts, and we are not increasing the number beyond what we've had for years. So that is the request.
Any discussion on the request on item 3? Again, I notice an action item, so we'll be taking a vote in just a minute. Any discussion? All right, I'm probably stating the obvious, but the children's waiting rooms are very important to all of our services, for all of the people that come to our courts. So, Sherry, well done. I think it's money well spent. Hearing no request for further discussion on item 3, and not trying to rush this, I want to make sure nobody has any further questions for Sherry. Hearing none, I'm going to follow the same procedure. Is there any opposition to item number 3, the request from L.A. County to increase the funding from $3 to $4.75? Hearing no opposition and stating the other way, I'm going to show that this is unanimously approved. Any objection to that? All right, item 3, the action item, is unanimously approved. Sherry, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that gets us to item 4. We're now actually ahead of schedule. And Colin, are you with us?
I am. I'm here to bring us behind schedule.
Okay. So here we go with the WAFM computations discussed. This is a discussion of the WAFM-based allocation of funding methodology computation for 2016. Substantial work's been done on this by Colin and by the subcommittee. Rebecca, thank you so much for that. And Judge Kuhl coming in as co-chair, really appreciate it. Colin, turning to you.
So this 2016-17 WAFM calculation incorporates updates to all of the major components and can actually be considered final this time. It reflects the refinements to the methodologies that were previously approved by the TICBAC, as well as very small adjustments to the methodology related to RAS in the provision of the RAS FTE need as well. They made a minor change in the methodology where they would include interpreters when calculating the number of supervisors interpreters that are needed, and I'm sure that Sherry can back me up on that one. Because Sherry's my go-to. She's always there. So
I'm here for you, Colin.
Thank you, Sherry. Appreciate it. So if we wanted to focus on the major attachments, because I will go through the information and provide you with an update here, but basically can break this into two components, and then we can focus on what are the major attachments that we want to look at and what do you want to get from this. Basically, there are two pieces to this. The first is just an update to the WAFM funding need and how that relates to what your allocations would be in 2016-17. And that would be basically, attachments 4B through 4L and 4S. And then the second part is basically kind of a status of a WAFM overall, of where are we now based on applying WAFM beginning in 13-14 and through 16-17. And those would be attachments 4N through 4R. The first, what we're going to focus on first, because I think what everyone is more interested in is, what's the new need and how does that affect my allocations in 16-17? So if you look at attachment 4B, which is on combined page 29, and I won't refer to combined anymore from this point forward, I'll just refer to the page number. But on combined page 29, you'll see the summary of the changes to the calculated need. And the calculated need is actually attachment 4C, and those are pages 30 through 33. But what this provides is a high overview of what's changed overall, and you can see in the report narrative as well that the funding need overall declined by roughly 1.3%. The primary drivers related to this were the RAS FTE need declined by 3.5%, and you can actually see the calculation of that if you're looking at for more detail. If you look at attachment 4C, columns A, B, and C will provide you with the RAS FTE need, and that's on pages 30 and 31. And then also an increase in the RAS salaries of
and I think it was 2%, 1.8%, slightly offset that. And you can actually see the RAS salary on the bottom left corner of page 31 of Attachment 4C. So this is all these items are a summary of what you'd see in Attachment 4C. So I'll be referring back to Attachment 4C for the next few items. We also updated the OE&E for the first time since 13-14. And that actually resulted in a small increase of about 0.5%. And you can actually see on column N, pages, and that's N as in Nancy, pages 32 and 33, you can see that. The benefits actually had a decrease. You can see the benefits on Attachment 4C in columns I through N, pages 32 through 33. And please let me know if I'm going too fast, because I know that I have a tendency to do that. So you can always tell me to slow down.
I don't think you're going too fast.
Okay. Not fast enough then, maybe. You can also let me know to speed up. So BLS adjustment, you'll see that in column G, pages 30 to 31, and as well as the AB 1058, column O, pages 32 to 33. So previously we'd refined the methodology as it related to the OE&E. And there were several adjustments related to that, and those were all incorporated when we did do this update. So there will be, like I said before, there are no planned adjustments or other changes made for this WAFM. So then you'll say, well, what does that mean for my court? Okay, what does that mean for your court? Well, that you would see in attachment 4I, and that should be on page 41, I believe. Yeah, and of course, it's if you printed this up, I'm sure you will be able to read it if you have a magnifying glass. But that's the allocation of new funding and reallocations. You'll actually be able to, if you're looking for just a higher level summary, don't worry about squinting your eyes and trying to read all these lines. I'll actually tell you where you can see that on attachment 4J. Attachment 4J has the estimated 16-17 WAFM allocation. And it basically summarizes all of those adjustments, the adjustments that you see in column R as well as column S on attachment 4I. You will actually see them on attachment 4J, which is on pages 42 and 43. You'll see them on columns J and column L. So if you're looking for what is going to be the impact to my court in 16-17, the cumulative adjustments in 16-17, that's where you find them. So those, I would say, are the attachments 4B, 4C, 4I, and 4J provide you with the most important information, I would say, for your court, as well as at a higher level, just understanding how WAFM has changed. We do also provide additional information, if you're interested, in attachments 4D through 4H, and this just provides additional information related to components for calculation, historical allocation, and the prior year 15-16 WAFM allocation. Those are on pages 34 to 40. You can also look at attachments 4K through 4L. That just gives you more detail on the funding floor adjustment calculations, okay? So then we move into, oh, and I'm sorry, and attachment 4S, which is at the very end, provides you with a massive amount of detail. It provides analysis by, and this is on pages 61 through 70, provides you analysis by court for various WAFM components and need, and also provides at the bottom of each category, you'll see groupings by cluster of the level of change from the prior year. Now, moving on to the status update. So for the status update, the most important tables to look at, I would say, are attachments 4M, which is table 1, and attachment 4P, which is table 2. 4M should be on page 46. Hang on a second here. Okay, so it should be on pages 46 and 47. And what this does, is this provides a few different perspectives on how the courts have been impacted by WAFM. So the first thing you would look at is if you look at column E2 on page 46, you'll see this column that says, subject to reduction from reallocation.
So what this actually identifies is that of the 58 courts, 16-17 Waltham, 36 courts are subject to an allocation reduction and 22 to an allocation increase when just looking at their historical base allocation being reallocated under Waltham. However, if you look at column H, you'll note that the number of courts that actually had would have a cumulative reduction in column H and in column L, number of courts with a cumulative reduction is actually less than that. It's only 11, and that's because of the new funding that we received. So due to the fact that we received new funding to offset the impact of the allocation reduction related to the reallocation of the historical base, only 11 courts have had a cumulative reduction, and of those, 4 courts are floor courts, meaning that's meaningful because this comparison does not actually look at the floor adjustments. This is just looking at a reallocation based on Waltham and not based on the subsequent adjustments made related to the funding floor. And if you take into account funding floor allocations and benefits cost funding in 16-17, only 5 courts are projected to have a cumulative reduction through 16-17. And we take that into account because part of the court's funding need does include benefits funding. So to exclude the benefits funding that we receive or to include it is appropriate in this case to determine whether or not those courts have seen an impact in their funding need. And you can actually see that information on column AD of attachment 4R on pages 59 and 60. So moving along rather quickly here, I'm almost done. Attachment 4N is a chart that provides, basically it's charting out the equalization of funding over time. And you can actually see the numbers behind this on attachment 4P, which is on pages 50 and 51. This basically shows that courts, as a level of their funding, as a percentage of their need, and how that's changed over time. And as you can see, the groupings are getting closer. From 14-15 through 17-18, they're getting closer together. And so if you actually look at pages 50 and 51, you'll see the numerical evidence of this, because you'll see in 14-15, Kern was at 50.4% in 14-15. But by 17-18, it'll be at 66%. And at the bottom of the scale, once you exclude the funding floor courts, that number has dropped. The scale has decreased from, excuse me, from 50% to 97.8 to a percentage of 66.1 to 93.8% in 17-18. One other thing I wanted to actually highlight, if we're looking at attachment 4P, as you'll see in column K, there's this item called the reallocation ratio. What this reallocation ratio does is it basically indicates to a court when funds are being reallocated, how much of $1 they will receive back. So if a court has an example, we'll say in the example of this, we'll refer to Kern, who has basically 150% reallocation ratio. For every dollar of their historical allocation that they give, they will get $1.50 back. So how would your court calculate that? Well, your court could easily calculate that if you looked at attachment 4G, which is the historical base allocation, the 13-14, which is on pages 37 and 38, and you look at columns 7 and 8. And basically in column 8, you'll see your court's percent of the historical base allocation. So if you take your percent of the historical base allocation, and if we say that we're reallocating 10% of the historical base allocation, you can just multiply that $1.44 billion times 10% times your court's percent of that base, and then multiply it by that reallocation ratio. And that would tell you how much your new allocation amount would be. So last but not least, because I'm not going to go through all of these, and I'm sure you're thankful for that, I am going to just quickly touch on – no, you know, actually, I already touched on 4P. So I'm just going to mention that the other two items, so you've got 4Q and 4R, attachments 4Q and 4R. And basically what these are providing is they're providing you with just your cumulative WAFM adjustments, so you can see all the adjustments over time, and then your and then actually your cumulative WAFM allocation over time. So that includes benefits and other items. So that just provides you with a history of cumulatively how things have changed. So you, you can also refer to that court-by-court information. Are there any questions?
Just a comment, and Sherry, correct me if I'm wrong on this, but you brought up a legitimate concern earlier about how the legislature understands WAFM. And Colin, your point that only five courts in 16-17 will have a cumulative reduction is actually very good news in the sense that that shows we're doing exactly what we were tasked to do. Again, thanks to Judge Earl and those folks that were the genesis of WAFM. It's working, but the legislature should not interpret that means we're anywhere close to our funding need. I mean, I'm just concerned that somebody's going to say, oh, look it, but it's really apples and oranges, right?
Right. The only reason why we're able to survive that way is because we're receiving new funding. If we did not receive that new funding, this would look different. This would look many more courts would be impacted by this.
Okay.
Well, and this is Rick Feldstein. The other thing to keep in mind is we did receive new funding, but a large portion of that was based upon increased expenses, such as for benefits, et cetera, retirement costs. And that does not increase the service level of the court. It only covers existing expenses.
That's a good point, too. All right. Colin, excellent presentation. I know it was very detailed but appropriately fast. Any questions, requests for clarification, anything at all? This is a discussion item, not an action item, but as a discussion item, that's what we're here for. We're ahead of schedule. Any questions or discussion concerns? Wow. Okay. I think that's good news. Again, I don't want to rush this. We're ahead of schedule. Colin and everybody else, great work on this. I know it at times can be eye-crossing, but I think the details are important. So I appreciate that work. With that, recognizing item four as a discussion item, and Cottrell, thank you as well, we'll move now to item five, which is the Prop 47. Again, this is a discussion item, and I know David's on the line, but he just commented, and Judge Kuhl's still with us, so I'll turn it over to you two.
Okay, this is Judge Kuhl. So this is a discussion about the allocation of the anticipated $21.4 million of Prop 47 money that is in the May revise. And we start the thinking on this with the way the funds were distributed for Prop 47 last year. And in the middle of page 71, you can see that allocation. So one of the pieces of the allocation of the Prop 47 funding last year was based on each court's share of the 10-year average of statewide felony filings. And the reason that was included was because there were a number of courts that were concerned that Prop 47 having been enacted so quickly, they were not able in the early months of implementing Prop 47 to have an accurate count of the number of petitions that were being processed. And so for that reason, the funding allocation included as a sort of a secondary way of getting at workload the share of the 10-year average statewide felony filings. So one of the issues that is highlighted in the options that you have for distribution of this year's funding is whether to continue to use that 10-year average statewide felony filings proportion as a factor. Options 1 and options 3A include that data.
My research plan has told me.
And David may want to say something about that in a minute. I think David and I, David Yamasaki and I, feel that we probably have reached a point in data collection that actual data is probably more representative of relative workload than the 10-year average of statewide felony filings. The other thing you see in last year's funding distribution is that half was distributed at the beginning of the fiscal year and half in January, halfway through the fiscal year, January 2016. And so our options also raise the issue of whether we should have a two-part distribution scheme. You'll see that option two that's before you only has one distribution, and that distribution is based on all of the filing data from the inception of Prop 47 up through what is currently available to us, which is through March 1 of this year. Option 3B has a two-part distribution, and the second part of that distribution would be based on the most recent 6 months of data that would be available in January of 2017. And the rationale for that distribution scheme is in part that the new money for the work to be done on Prop 47 is intended to deal with new filings, and so we would want the most recent data available to do that. The other argument in favor of a look only at the most recent 6 months data is that we think there's a possibility that the work may again be shifting, the number of filings may again be shifting, particularly as defense counsel perhaps are rushing to make a lot of filings at the end of the statute of limitations period if they did not make that rush at the beginning. David, I'm going to just ask you for comments.
Yeah, and thanks very much for giving a very thorough overview of where we are today. I just want to add a couple things. One, entering this budget year, one of the pieces of information that was disseminated to all of the trial courts was that because of the uncertainty and the actual volume of petitions that courts would experience, we really insisted that the methodology that we would be using for counting the filings was the capturing of the actual petitions that were filed starting in June, July. So since that time, we've had very, very good fortune in capturing the information on petitions filed for each of the courts. That seems to be working extremely well. But just touching upon something that Judge Kuhl had just mentioned, the distribution that we had looked at was a methodology. Should it be given in two allocations, or should it be a number at the very beginning of the year for all of the courts? It seems to me that because of the possibility that courts are going to potentially see a rush of petitions that are going to be filed over this coming fiscal year, it seems to be appropriate to make an allocation in two forms, half of it at the beginning and the second half based on the latest information that is filed through September of 16, so that there is much more accuracy in the type of information that we build that formula. So with that, this is not an action item, but rather a description of where we are today. Obviously, we are optimistic that the appropriation amount will remain as identified there. And as we move forward, our hope, of course, is to convene the small subcommittee so that we can formalize the proposal for the trial court budget advisory committee, consider how those monies would be distributed to the different courts. So if there are any questions, we'd be happy to answer them.
So just to, and again, thank you, David and Judge Kuhl, very much. Obviously, discussion is pending, but just so everybody understands, what we'll do now is send this back to Judge Kuhl and David's subcommittee, and then when we meet for our TICBAC meeting July 7th, I think it is, which I anticipate will be in person, this will become an action item to consider the recommendations. Is that your thoughts as well, David and Judge Kuhl?
Yes.
Yes. But I think it, insofar as people have sentiments at this point, if we have the time, it would be useful to hear them.
I agree, especially with the focus towards which one of those, without making a decision today, if anybody has thoughts on initially the most appropriate option for them to focus on. I hear David commenting substantially on, I think, was that option 3B, David?
That's correct.
Okay. Without trying to direct the discussion, is that something where you think we should focus?
Yeah, one of the reasons for looking at 3B, I think everybody is pretty comfortable at this point in the methodology for capturing workload. One is based on a projection, and that's since we didn't have any other information to go on for this the beginning of this budget year or the beginning of Prop 47's enactment. A lot has changed. Everybody's pretty much gotten their hands around capturing what is applicable, and so that's my sense that option 3B seems to be as accurate as we can get, but also recognizing there could be some fluctuations that can take place that we obviously want to try to capture and consider in calculating the formula for distribution.
All right. Any other questions or discussion?
This is Jose. One consideration, perhaps, given that we have gotten our arms around it and perhaps the level of petitions being filed may be, you know, kind of labeling off, perhaps we treat this a little bit different and treat it like our jury holding back a portion and instead of doing half and half, maybe do 90%, 80%, and hold back a smaller percentage for redistribution at the end of the day, at the end of the year. It will allow us to have those that need the cash flow to have more money when you need it, as opposed to waiting half day. It's not a lot of money, but maybe we're stabilized to the point that we can anticipate more closely.
You know, that model was something that we had considered when we were looking at AB 109, and that is the subcommittee that I co-chaired with Judge Wesley from Los Angeles. And there was definitely a positive benefit by taking that approach. And going back to that model, the amount of money that we ended up redistributing was a very small number. It was something on the order of $3,000. So I think that we have a pretty good idea of what we're seeing, and obviously looking at more current information and doing it in two allocations should capture it. And, while it could be an option for us to consider to hold back a little bit, you know, given the experience that we had with AB 109 and the fact that it represented such a small number, it makes probably more sense to just distribute it completely using the two allocation formula. It's my sense.
And David, is your thought that by the time we get to the July meeting, we'll have perhaps some more data in support of that?
Yeah, I think so. We have not heard, and certainly the folks from the JC team can weigh in on this, but we haven't heard any you know, issues where there may be something not being captured. It seems to be pretty good at this point, and I'll defer to perhaps Patrick to weigh in or Shelley.
Yeah, this is Patrick. I have not heard those. We did do the, like Judge Kuhl said, the first distribution was based on 50% filings, 10-year filings, and 50% workload for the first half of the $26.9 million last year. And then there was a second distribution that was in the that was based completely on workload. And when it was distributed, there was nobody. I did not hear anything from the courts, and I do not believe criminal Francine or in criminal justice heard any comments or about the distribution not being accurate or reflecting the workload. So it was completely based on workload.
Patrick, I think Judge Conklin's question is whether we'd have more data by the time of the July meeting.
Yes, we will. We would have. We will have data up through March 31st of 2016.
Good. Okay. Any other discussion, Sherry? I know early on you had some comments for Zlatko, and I didn't mean to. I think you got those out, but I want to make sure if any of those are related to this item as well. We all
you
recognize.
Know, they really were not. They were more directly related to the offset for Prop 47 and perhaps giving them some ideas, but it sounds like they had already thought of them.
Good. Okay.
On the broader issue, this is Judge Kuhl, Judge Conklin. Not the broader issue, but the specific issue of the Budget Sub 5 Committee subtracting for decreases in felony filings. I think it's a terrible, terrible precedent that we need to resist because as filings fluctuate, that is reflected in WAFM, and we are all underfunded under WAFM. So if the legislature or the governor is going to start looking at one area of our workload and subtracting from our funding because that particular area, the filings have decreased, we're just going to be in a downward spiral. And I feel very, very strongly that we have to resist that proposal, even if it is just whatever it is, $1.4 million and doesn't look like that much. The principle is terrifically important.
I could not agree more strongly. If, you know, I recognize that we're a limited number of folks here on this committee, but unless anybody disagrees with that sentiment, a suggestion would be that you start getting the message out in your own courts and to your own representatives. I think it is a very dangerous road to take, and I think Zlatko was pretty firm earlier when he said that staff is already speaking up, noting that should just not be an offset. So I appreciate those comments, Judge Kuhl.
Well, I don't know if this is something that we want to have a sense of the group about, just to reinforce to Zlatko and Martin and Corey the importance we think this issue has, even for this year's budget.
I'm as chair, I'll be more than happy to do that. I don't want to insinuate that other people should not speak, but I'm more than happy to have that discussion with Zlatko and with Martin and Corey. And if anybody wants to send an email to me to communicate to them or communicate to them directly, I encourage you to do that. Judge Kuhl has stated it well.
I completely agree with the sentiment.
Is there anybody that has a different, and I'm not trying again to dissuade folks from having a different opinion, but is there anybody that has a different perspective on this? Because if not, what I would communicate is that our committee is speaking with one voice and essentially unanimously that we believe that JC staff should continue to, as they have been doing, continue to speak up on this and make our sentiment known. Okay. Any other discussions on this item in general? All right. Then I think that takes us to the last item. Patrick, you're still with us?
Yes, Judge.
Great. This is item six, labeled the estimate of benefit cost changes for 2016-17, and take it away.
Okay. So as everyone is already aware at this point that there is $16.1 million in the May revise of new funding for benefit cost changes. This reflects an increase of $500,000 from the governor's budget Most of the increase is attributed to increased premiums for retiree health and health. The main revised amount includes $8.6 million to address the full year impact to the trial courts in 16-17 of changes in costs for retirement, retiree health, employee health that were anticipated to occur in 15-16. So it's actually the costs are in 15-16, but we get funded for the four-year costs in the following year. And of this amount, there's $7.5 billion, and that is to restore an additional portion of the $22 million reduction offset of the 12-13, 13-14 trial court benefit request included in the Budget Act of 2014. This reduction amount was based on the DOF estimate of what trial courts were currently spending to cover the employee share of retirement in 2013-14. Since additional courts negotiated to either eliminate or reduce the amount that they were contributing to the employee share over the current in 15-16, the $7.5 million was an acknowledgement that courts were continuing to make progress towards meeting the Public Employees Pension Reform Act 2013 standard. So of this funding, of the $8.6 million, $8.5 is for non-interpreter, so it's for trial court trust fund court operations, and that is reflected in Attachment 1, Column D. The $157,000, and that is for court interpreters, trial court trust and court interpreter program. For the $7.5 million in restored retirement funding, $7.1 million is for the non-interpreters. So that would be the trial court trust and court operations program, and $446,000 is for the trial court trust and court interpreter program appropriation. The in terms of this funding that's been restored, the Judicial Council in June 2015 approved the Trial Court Budget Advisory Committee's recommendation for the allocation of funding for non-interpreter funding in 16-17. And based on the council approved methodology for 2016, all courts that no longer pay any portion of the employee share of costs for retirement would be fully funded for their 12-13, 13-14 benefit cost increases. That would, in this year, based on what all the courts that no longer contribute towards the employee share, the cost to actually make the courts whole for their, again, 12-13, 13-14 benefit cost changes that were reduced would be $5.9 million. And if we did not receive any new funding based on more courts negotiating a decrease in the contribution amount, those courts would be reduced. So based on the fact that we received $7.1 million in additional courts negotiating the reduction of the contribution towards the employee share of retirement, there is enough funding to fund all the courts to do not contribute, which is $5.9 million. And in addition, there's the balance remaining of $1.2 million would also be enough to fund the $1.14 million needed to restore the courts that still contribute at least some portion of the employee share of costs for retirement to be fully funded. If this funding is included in 2016 Budget Act, a total amount of $20.3 million for non-interpreter funding will have been restored, and the trial courts would be made whole for their 12-13 and 13-14 benefit cost increases. I do want to mention that in Detachment 2, there are, you know, reflects courts that are still contributing at some portion of the employee share, but these courts, these courts, on average, have actually reduced the contribution amount by 88%, and the same courts have contributed $11.5 million of the $20.3 million that will be restored. So that concludes my presentation. Is there questions?
This is a discussion item. Any issues or any thoughts on further discussion? So, Patrick, would your thought be then that this will come before TICFAC is July 7th for a final action item?
That is correct, Judge.
Okay. Any further discussion on this? Okay, hearing none, it's 11:30. I think we've completed all six items before we adjourn. Appreciate the fact this is conducted by phone. I know at times that can be a little cumbersome, but I think we accomplished everything we needed to. On the other hand, I think face-to-face meetings are important. I know at times they can be a little bit inconvenient, but unless something changes, I'd anticipate our July 7th. I know many of you might be on vacation. That's okay. Meeting will probably be in person. If you have feelings about that you want to share with me, feel free to send me an email. Martin did increase our funding a little bit to allow for additional some in-person meetings. Beyond that, any additional concerns for the good of the order or discussion thoughts? Okay, I want to thank everybody who participated in these items today. Very helpful, very efficient. JC staff as well. Thank you all very much. I think we're adjourned. Thank you all very, very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.